Harry Smith's 1952 landmark Anthology of American Folk Music was re-released last month, and our rock historian Ed Ward says it's one of this year's highlights. The collection, which had an impact far wider than its sales, influenced a generation of young people who were searching for meaning during a bland time. As Ed Ward points out, the anthology changed many lives, including his own.
The records that changed my life are finally available again. This August, the Smithsonian Institute released the obscure but important Anthology of American Folk Music on CD after it had languished in a legal limbo for a couple of decades. If it were only my life that had been changed, it would be a small matter. But, as the sumptuous booklet that accompanies this collection makes clear, hundreds of other people who later became involved in American music as performers and researchers were also what one essay calls the brotherhood of the anthology. There was Bob Dylan, who recorded several of the songs here, and innumerable other folk singers. Jerry Garcia was moved to take up the banjo by the anthology. The list goes on. The story of how it came about is almost as fascinating as the anthology itself. Harry Smith, who compiled it, was an eccentric painter, filmmaker, and folklorist who mined the load of 78 RPM records being sold as scrap during World War II and came up with an impressive collection of folk music. In the early 50s, being short of cash, he approached Moses Ash of Folkways Records and offered to sell him the records in return for being allowed to compile them into an anthology, and Ash accepted. The project was completed in 1952, and the world was changed.
Going to build me a log cabin on a mountain so high so I can see Willie as he goes on by.
The anthology was divided into three two-record sets, ballads, social music, and songs, and most of the performers featured on it, like Clarence Ashley, were complete unknowns. Today, it's weird to think of someone mounting a project with such a definitive name and omitting such performers as Robert Johnson, Gid Tanner, the Monroe Brothers, and Son House, but in a way, it makes sense. Smith was after content. Anglo-Scottish ballad survivals, archetypal blues verses, and the places where the black and white Southern traditions intersected.
Come on, you good time people, while I've got money to spend. Tomorrow might be money, and I don't have a dollar nor a friend. When I had plenty of money, good people, my friends were all standing around. Just as soon as my pocketbook was empty, not a friend on earth to be found. Last time I seen my little woman, good people, she had a wine glass in her hand. She was drinking down her troubles with a low-down sorry man.
Doc Boggs, for instance, was a white mountaineer, but Country Blues reflects his lifelong interest in the music the African Americans around him played. Nor was Smith a run-of-the-mill folklorist. For instance, he realized that there was a black ballad tradition that paralleled the more heavily researched white one.
Frankie was a good girl, everybody knew. She'd pay $100 for out one suit of clothes. He's a man, and he done it wrong.
For many of us who heard Mississippi John Hurt's recasting of the Frankie and Johnny story, though, the wonder was in the guitar picking. One apocryphal story has a young folkie playing this record for Andres Segovia, who swore there were two guitarists on it. There weren't. Another side effect of the anthology was that young researchers went to see if any of these people were still alive, and many of us had the pleasure of watching John Hurt, still nimble, pick Frankie before our amazed eyes. Clarence Ashley and Doc Boggs, too, were found still playing, and I attended a concert in New York where Ashley introduced a young man who played with him in those days, Arthel Doc Watson. I guess we shouldn't be amazed that these people were still alive in the early 60s. After all, in 1952, these records were more recent than Beatles records are to us today. They were mostly recorded between 1927, when electrical recording made higher fidelity possible, and 1931, when the Depression made such marginal records unprofitable. What was amazing, though, was that the archaic culture they documented was not quite gone, a link to an unimaginable past for a generation raised in the comfort and convenience of the 50s. It seemed like the roots of something important lurked here. I even found what I thought was some early rock and roll in an instrumental break on Sleepy John Estes' Express Man Blues.
Play it, thing, boy.
In one of the essays included with the set, Luke Sante says that every 12-year-old should have a copy of the anthology. This one did, and it opened his eyes to what Greil Marcus, in an essay adapted from his amazing new book, Invisible Republic, calls the old, weird America. Thanks to Harry Smith, it still lives.
Rock historian Ed Ward lives in Berlin. He reviewed the reissue of the Anthology of American Folk Music, now on CD.